Well, good morning and welcome to One Love. It's so good to see everyone today. I hope you have enjoyed the month of May and it's treated you well. But whether it has or it hasn't, June arrives tomorrow. Is that not crazy? Summer is upon us. Yes, yeah, some of you guys are excited. Some of you guys are not excited about summer happening. But nonetheless, it is here. And I am convinced today that what we're going to talk about can potentially set you up so you can have the best month that you've had thus far in 2015. But before we jump in, I just want to welcome everybody and say thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us. If you are a guest, we've been thinking about you and praying for you all week, and we're trusting that God is going to speak something significant in your life. And we also think that church is supposed to be fun, that you should want to come back. So hopefully that's the case for you as well. If you don't know, if you're a guest, haven't been here in a little bit, we're wrapping up a series called I Quit right now. And this series is birthed out of this idea. You need to make changes. There are things about you, there are things about me that need to change, right? I know that there are areas that I fall short in as a dad. There are areas that I fall short in as a husband, as an employer, as an employee, as a friend. And so if I want to experience forward motion, if I want to experience growth and become a better human and ultimately walk in the call that I believe God's placed on my life, then I've got to be able, or willing rather, to say I quit to certain things, right? So the first week of the series, we said, I quit making excuses. I'm done. No longer is it her fault or their fault, or no longer will I make an excuse why I can't get out of debt or why this isn't happening in my life, but I'm going to dig my heels in. I'm going to surrender those areas of my life to God and allow him to do a work in that situation. That was the first week. I quit making excuses. Second week was I quit complaining. What would it look like if you stopped complaining? I bet you your life would look tremendously different, because mine would look unbelievably different. I bicker, I'm a whiner, I complain. And what if we said together as a faith community, I quit complaining. I'm not gonna be that guy anymore. I'm gonna be positive. I'm gonna allow God to speak into those situations that I'm so negative about, that I complain about. I quit complaining. And then last week we said, what if we could say, I quit living in fear. No longer will I be gripped by certain things that stop me from being who God has called me to be, or accomplishing what God has called me to accomplish. I'm saying I quit living in fear. Why? Because God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a spirit of love, power, and a sound mind. That was last week. And this week, we're going to wrap up the series by hopefully agreeing to say together this right here. I quit comparing. I quit. I'm done looking at her or looking at him and saying, why do they have that, or why don't I have this, or how can I get what they have? I'm not going to play the comparison game anymore. I'm not going to fall into the comparison trap. I'm saying I quit comparing. As of late, it's becoming quite evident that I'm getting older because I'm taking an interest in lawn care. And I think it's a sure sign that you're into your 30s, moving towards 40. But that's where I'm at in life, and I've never really been a big fan of lawn maintenance, or you know, making sure my grass looks a certain way. But now I've become pretty anal about how my grass looks, and I want it to look a certain way. And so over the past 2 years, I've been on this project where we moved into this house, and the grass is kind of tiered, and I actually have a picture coming up. So it's kind of tiered right here, and this whole section up here we reseeded last summer. And I'm telling you, there was I had to borrow my buddy's trailer, and I took two trailer full of roots and a truck full of roots. And I'm not saying just like little roots; I mean like massive roots. And you can see the only trees are right here, but there was roots all over in here. And so that was last summer. And this summer I was trying to get this area dialed in, and there was so bad we couldn't play on our front. We couldn't play catch together with the kids or anything. You just roll your ankle because the roots were so bad. And so we started to rip up the roots in this area, and by we, I mean Roberto started to rip up all of the roots, and And I'm telling you, it was just a tremendous amount of garbage. It was unbelievable. And so then we started to reseed everything. And now it's starting to grow. And what's interesting about this whole scenario is my neighbor, Ken, if he's listening, he may or may not appreciate this, but his yard is incredible. He's in his 70s, he's retired, and it looks like he spends 8 to 10 hours a day on his yard because he spends 8 to 10 hours a day on his yard. It's beautiful. It's like an oasis, right? And he didn't like how his grass looked, and I'm like, why don't you just take your grass and put it on my lawn, right? So he dethatched some things, and he was going to start reseeding. And we reseeded almost at the exact same time. And I found myself about 2 days after we both reseeded on my hands and knees in Ken's yard trying to determine whose grass is growing faster. And as I'm on my hands and knees and I'm looking at Ken's yard, I watched him leave so he couldn't see me. But I'm thinking, what is wrong with me? How pathetic that I'm comparing whose grass is growing faster. Comparison is a trap. And most of the time, we don't even realize we're doing it. And as I kind of thought about comparison a little bit more, I felt like there's four general areas that started to surface in regards to areas that we compare ourselves to other people. And the first area is this right here. We have a tendency to compare our possessions with other people. Have you ever been at a stoplight in your new car? And you love this car because your old one was giving you a hard time, and you're in this new car and you're so grateful for it. You feel like it's such a blessing. It's new. It's like, this is it, right? Or even if it's just new to you. And then another car pulls up and it's the same one that you have, but it's the LX and not the EX. And so you notice that on this one, it's got different wheels. It's got a different trim package, and all of a sudden you start comparing your car to their car. And your car doesn't seem as great as their car. And so now you're kind of, right? You ever want something, but you just weren't able to swing it, you weren't able to get it? Like the new iPhone comes out and you want the 6, but it doesn't work out. And then John ends up getting the 6 and you're like, well, I didn't really want the 6 anyways. I saw John's and I'm just going to stick with the 5S. It's just got more features. I'll wait till they work out the bugs next go around when they come out with the 6S, you know, the 6S. And so I'll just kind of wait. And guys, we're the only ones that say that. And so we know that that is just simply code for your wife said you can't do it. So just own it. But, well, we have this thing. We have this thing where we compare. We compare with what other people have. I went and picked up my daughter from a friend's house in the Coburg Hills. And I'm driving through this, you know, electronic gate that you've got to punch in these numbers to open up to this subdivision on these rolling hills with these just incredibly beautiful homes. And I'm weaving up this hill, and my daughter gets in the car and she starts to tell me how incredible the property is and how nice the house is, and I could tell that she's so smart. She's smart enough to where she's trying to tell me about this person's house that is so incredible, you know, without comparing it to our house, you know. And it's something that is almost impossible to do, because by nature, we as humans move in the direction of comparing what we have with what other people have. Another area that we tend to make comparisons is our appearance. And I think guys and girls, they both compare, but oftentimes it's easier to tell when a girl is comparing. Right? If you've just ever watched a couple girls talk and then another girl walks into the conversation, and everyone can be chatty Cathy, but all of a sudden one other person comes in the conversation and then it went from, oh, oh. And you're like saying hi like this. Oh, hi. Yeah, it's so good to see you. It's like, we can tell, we can see it on your face, right? You're not hiding it very well. And it's kind of immediately you start to up and down, and you look like, oh, oh. And then when she walks away, it's, oh, my God, Becky, look at her butt, right? And you start to compare. I would never do my hair like that, or I can't believe she's even trying to pull that off. That's just so ridiculous, right? And we begin to compare. And guys, we compare a little bit different. We're comparing. We're hoping that we have hair. It's like, who's got more hair at this point, right? Or who's stronger, or who's bigger? And so we all have the tendency just to make these comparisons against other people. Another area that we make comparisons in is our performance. It's like, well, my sales numbers are way better than theirs. So why'd they get the job? Why'd they get the promotion? Or the only reason why their numbers aren't as good as my numbers, or my numbers aren't as good as theirs, is because my area or my territory is saturated. Right? So don't get it twisted. So I'm just as good. And we kind of measure people's performance. It might be something like this for you. How does she do it? And she's got makeup on. Both kids look like they're bathed, and I can't even get out of my pajamas. And it's measuring up. You're trying to figure out how you land. Where do you fit into the scheme of things? Another comparison that we make is in the area of our circumstances. Maybe everyone around you, you want nothing more than to have a baby, and it doesn't seem to be happening for you, but everyone around you is having twins. And you begin to compare your situation to theirs. Or maybe you're like the queen of bridesmaids, but you don't want to be a bridesmaid anymore, you want to be a bride. And you look at their situation and go, how in the world are they finding someone, but I can't seem to find someone? What's the deal? And the comparison trap, we walk right into it. Do I have what they have? Do I look better than them? Am I as successful as they are? I would have had that if I knew those people too. And I think just like making excuses and complaining and living in fear grieves the heart of God, I think comparing yourself to other people grieves the heart of God also. And so what I want to do is I want to give you a few reasons, just so we have some idea of why God gets upset with us when we compare ourselves to other people. Here's the first reason. It's because comparison kills contentment in our life. Comparison absolutely kills contentment. And in fact, Paul emphatically says this in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. He says, we do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with someone who commend, or with some who commend themselves. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. Paul is saying, listen, do not compare. Don't you dare compare. It's not smart. Because comparing, it kills the joy in your life. Comparing robs you from enjoying what God has given you and what God is doing in you. Comparing robs us of meeting. It destroys marriages. Comparing is evil at its core. It brings something out of you that shouldn't come out of you. It kills the contentment in our life. I think Paul is also on a larger scale trying to communicate something that I think is so significant for many of us here, and we need to hear this. I think Paul's trying to communicate on a larger scale that success is not about you being superior or inferior to anyone else. Rather, success is being who God created you to be, not who you want to be. Success is embracing who God has called you to be and who God has created you to be instead of who you just want to be. Comparison kills contentment. Another reason why comparison grieves the heart of God is because comparison breeds pride. There's something about comparison, if you just reverse it and you're the other guy in the car, and you pull up, and you guys are at similar cars, and you look over and you notice his wheels aren't as nice as yours. Their trim package isn't as nice as yours. And all of a sudden you sit up a little bit taller in your seat. And what's happening is a measure of pride is seeping in. In Luke chapter 18, Jesus tells this story where this Pharisee, he prays this prayer. It says, the Pharisee stood by himself and prayed. This is egregious. God, I thank you that I'm not like other people. Robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I have. You hear the pride in the Pharisee's prayer. He's comparing what he has and what he does and what he gives with what they have and what they give. And he thinks what he has and what he does is better and that he gives more. And so pride seeps in and it's ultimately robbing him from experiencing the kind of life that God sent Jesus so that he could experience. I think that we are all too much like this Pharisee at times. Maybe we don't pray like him, but in our thoughts, we're very much like him. And our thoughts are so important. Right? In Proverbs, it says, as a man thinks, so is he. So we've got to be so careful to how comparison is playing a role in our thought life, even in the privacy of our own thoughts. Have you ever walked into Walmart and you saw a screaming kid? You know, he's just kicking his feet. He's rolling around on the ground and screaming, and the mom has no clue what to do. And you're just like, this kid, he's possessed, you know? I mean, this kid is crazy. And you don't think, oh, that poor mom. You don't think that. You think, my kid would never do that. Don't you? I'd smack my kid upside the head so hard if he did that. I wouldn't even have to do that. I'd give him the mom stare. The dad stare, right? Don't you even think about it, right? And you look at him and you know your kid's different. And so what happens is you begin to think you're just a little bit better. I think this happens in so many different areas of our life. And you can see someone doing something that you would never do. I can't believe they smoke. Are you kidding me? It's not 1960. They know it's bad for their health. They're not being lied to. I can't believe they smoke. I would never do that to my body. Excuse me, sir. Do you say you want that super duper sized? It's like, are you serious? The things that we do because they have a vice that we don't have. We think that we can point the finger and we can compare ourselves to them. And why do we do that? Because it makes me feel a little bit better about myself. And comparison, again, it creeps in and it robs you. It steals your joy. It kills the meaning in your life. I was in a small group this last semester with a group of guys, and we were reading Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. And by the way, small groups sign up start today, and there's a piece of paper under every single one of your chairs with all the group listings. You just pick your group and mark it on the communication card that you got, and we'll give you all the information that you need about that group. But and hey, if you're here and you're like, oh, small groups aren't for me, I've never done one, this whole series is about making changes and experiencing something different in your life. So if you want to make positive change, you've got to do things maybe that you're not used to doing. So seriously and prayerfully consider signing up for a small group, because I think it's a game changer. One of our core values as a church is that growing people change, right? So if you want to change, if you want to grow, you've got to make some changes in certain areas. So that's my shameless plug that I'll give you. But back to my small group that I was in, Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, and it was an incredible group. This book is so profound. C.S. Lewis says that every sin was birthed out of pride. Every sin is originated from pride, he says. And then he talks a little bit more about pride, and he gives us some great insight on pride. He says, pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next man. We say that people are proud of being rich or clever or good looking, but they're not. They're proud of being richer or cleverer or more good looking than others. If everyone else became equally rich or clever or good looking, there would be nothing to be proud about. Pride will steal your lunch. Pride will lead you specifically to comparison. And when you get there, you think you're owed something, right? You think you should have gotten the promotion, or you should be driving that car. And then if you are driving that car and you did get the promotion, you think it's because of you. It steals from you. It ultimately robs for you. So comparison kills contentment. Comparison breeds pride. And here's the next thing that comparison does. Comparison creates resentment. There is no way around this. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 6 through 9, we're going to look at a story about Saul and David in the Old Testament. Saul is the king of Israel. David is a soldier at the time. He's kind of moving up the ranks. He's soon to be King David. Saul is very aware of that. And so listen how this story plays out. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with tambourines and lutes. What happened to the tambourines, right? As they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." Saul was very angry. This refrain galled him. In other words, Saul is upset about what the people are saying about David. They have credited David with tens of thousands. He thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. So comparison, it creates resentment. And in fact, I would go further to say this. This is what happened when comparison seeps into our life. We end up resenting God's goodness in other people's lives, and we ignore God's blessing in our own. That's a problem. When you are so consumed with what they have or where they're going or with what they're doing that you have lost the ability or the presence of mind to sit back in your situation and say, God, thank you for what you've given me. Thank you for what you're doing in me. Listen, folks, the grass is always greener on the other side. Don't allow yourself to fall in to the comparison trap. And that's exactly what happened to King Saul. It didn't matter that David was fighting for Saul. Saul didn't care. It didn't matter that David was helping advance Saul's kingdom. He didn't care. Why? Because he was comparing himself to David. And when people were saying good things about David, it infuriated Saul to the point where he couldn't be happy for David. Have you ever met anyone like that? You ever met someone who doesn't know how to be happy for someone else? Isn't it just so ugly? It's so terrible when you know someone isn't going to be happy for you no matter what. No one wants to be around that person. You get the new house, and what do they have to say? I'm not a real big fan of the neighborhood that you bought the house in. You get the car. That car is not that great. That's the new body style, yeah, but they got to work out the kinks in that. That's the aluminum frame. I'm just going to stick with the older one. They're just not happy for you. Oh, yeah, you got the promotion. You achieved the goal, but let me tell you why you achieved the goal and what really was happening behind it. Yeah, you got their promotion, but really all that means is more responsibility and not nearly enough pay. They just don't know how to be happy for other people. Maybe that's you. and you don't know how to be happy for other people. When they get something or something good happens to them, you automatically, it's not that great, or this is why that happened, or and you start to compare rather than just saying, wow, that's awesome for you. I'm so excited for you. That's great for you. I'm so glad God blessed you with that. When that becomes difficult to come out of your mouth, you know you've fallen into the comparison trap. When you can't look at one of your friends or an acquaintance and say, that's so awesome, man, with sincerity, and say, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for what God's doing in your life. I'm excited about the way God's blessing you. If you can't say that, you've fallen into the comparison trap. And again, that is a problem. And that's because you're full of resentment. Because that's what comparison creates inside of you, is resentment. It doesn't allow you to be happy for other people. Comparison is ugly. Comparison is like cancer. You can have it and not even know it, but it's eating you from the inside out. And if you're not careful, you can end up long down the road with no joy, with no meaning, thinking that someone owed you or you got screwed. And if you could just say, I quit comparing, it's a game changer. If you can say, God, in the areas and the times where I'm about to compare what they have with what I have, or where they're going with where I'm going, or with what they're doing with what I'm doing, I quit. I'm allowing you to do a work in me in that situation. I promise you, it'll be a game changer. So listen, now we're fully aware of how comparison works. We're fully aware that comparison is a bad thing. It steals our lunch, right? It does bad things in our life. So now I'm gonna give you just a couple ideas or a couple things that we can be aware of that'll help us avoid falling into the comparison trap. Here's one thing. You need to know what you have. You need to know what you have. And this is difficult. This is a process. And it's not one that is learned easy. But that's a key word. You have to learn, right? Listen to what Paul says in Philippians. And as just as a reminder, if you're not aware, this guy who writes this book, his name is Paul, and he's written like 2/3 of the New Testament, so he's a pretty reputable character all throughout Scripture and very very central to the Christian faith. Paul is writing from a prison cell. Okay, so this is what he writes. I'm not saying this because I'm in need. Really? You're in prison. You're not in need? For I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. Can you say that? I can't. I'm trying so hard to be able to, though. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. Here it comes again. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. Paul submitted himself to the process of learning how to be content. He submitted himself to the process of trying as hard as he could, I would imagine, to be aware of what he has. You have to know what you have. When I know what I have, right? When I know what God has given me, I no longer have to worry about what they have. When I know what I have, it helps me become more grateful, because again, it reminds me of what God is doing in my life. And when I'm reminded of what God is doing in my life, it takes the pressure off me to look at you or you or you, to see what's happening in your life and then making the comparison between the two. Is there nothing that frustrates you more, moms and dads, than when your kids are at the table and he says, his piece is bigger? You say, son, son, I've given you a piece too. Look what I've given you. Don't you see what's in front of you? So if you know you have something in front of you that I've given you, why are you concerned about what they have? You have to know what you have. And not only do you have to know what you have, you need to know who you are. I am amazed at how many people I meet who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s who have yet to figure out who they are. Who are flailing through life aimlessly, trying to find their identity in a career, or trying to find their identity in a thing. And they're playing the game, and they're trying to get to the top of the ladder. And what ends up happening is you get to the top of the ladder and you realize that your ladder's leaning on the wrong wall. You have to know who you are. In Ephesians, Paul tells us this. He says, you're God's workmanship. That's who you are. You're created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for you. Think about that. He prepared in advance for you to be a dad, for you to be a mom. He prepared it in advance. The time that you're in, this moment, he prepared it in advance for you. He shaped you and molded you and created you in a way, gave you a certain set of skills and giftedness to accomplish something that, dare I say, only you can do. See, when you embrace the reality that God has given you certain things, and you then know what you have, and you know who you are, all of a sudden it begs the question, if I know what God has given me, if I know what I have, and I know who I am, why would I ever compare myself with what they have or who they are? When you know that God created you the way that he created you, and when you cross over the line of comparison, you are now stepping into God territory, and you are assuming the role and the responsibility that you know better than he does. You know better than he does. Why would he give them that and give me this? No. Don't play that game. Don't play that game. You're on dangerous grounds at that point. I know what God has given me. I know what I have. And I know I wasn't created like them. So now I know who I don't have to be. Isn't that freeing? When you can sit in the seat that you're in right now and say, I'm free to be me. I don't have to try to be them. When you know what you have and you know who you are, it frees you up to be who God has called you to be. So I want to encourage you with this morning. I'll leave you with this thought. Quit trying to be who you want to be and embrace the process of becoming who God created you to be. I'll say it one more time. Quit trying to be who you want to be and embrace the process of becoming who God created you to be. All you have to do is say, I quit making excuses. I quit complaining. I quit living in fear. I quit comparing. And I promise you, if you put your hope in him, if you put your trust in Jesus and you say, I quit, God, do a work in these areas in my life. I quit. I quit living in fear. I quit complaining. I quit making excuses, and I quit comparing. I'm telling you, it's a game changer, and he's going to do something significant in your life. I quit. Amen? Would you bow your head and pray with me?